ओम ज्ञानतिमिरंदस्य जनजनसलकया चक्षुसुमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोविष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं उपकदमयं ददति सर्वनातिकम् पञ्चकल्पतुभ्यश्च कृपसन्निवेयश्च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. This pastime in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam about Maharaj Chitraketu is starting to move into philosophy, because Chitraketu has, by the power of the great sage Angira Muni, been awarded with a son named Harshashoka, although by his karma it was not due to him, the son was not due to him. But the potency of a great sage is that he can manipulate through his own power, he can change, adjust the more or less unbreakable laws of the material nature, of the material world. I don't know that melody. I prefer Brahms. What was it? Bach we had last time. Which one was it? Beethoven. It was Beethoven. Could you either change it to Beethoven or, or maybe... So great sages, they know the system. Oops. They know the system of manipulating the material energy through material forces. But beyond that, they also know how to contact the spiritual energy if they are truly great sages. So Angira Muni, using a sacrifice to Tvasta, produced some prasadam, sweet rice, and the wife of Chitraketu Maharaj, Kritiluti, took that. And although it was not the karma of Chitraketu Maharaj to have children, she became pregnant and she gave birth to a wonderful son. Harshashoka means, Harsha means happiness and Shoka means lamentation. One of Krishna's qualities is Shoka Nashanam, that he removes all lamentation from the heart of the living entity. Lamentation, illusion, fear, anxiety is literally what it means to be in this material world and material consciousness, viewing matter for our enjoyment, as if it was made for our enjoyment. So in any case, this boy grew up and he, of course, naturally, he was the apple of his parents' eye. They loved him dearly, and the king withdrew his affection from his other wives and placed it solely on Kritiduti. He neglected his other wives, and the other wives became very envious. And they lamented, and they plotted due to their envy, and they eventually gave the child poison and killed him. When the queen found out that the child had died, her son, her beloved son, and when the king found out, and the kingdom found out, the whole kingdom, practically speaking, was thrown into lamentation. Everyone was crying and crying and crying. And the queen, Kritiduti, she even criticized the creator for allowing this to happen, for allowing the son to die in the presence of the father. She begged her son to step back from his accompanying Yamaraj, the lord of death, and come back. Come back. But of course, the child could not come back due to her, just because of her pleas. So just then, Angira Muni appeared in disguise, while everyone was lamenting and crying and beating their chests and heads. Tears were flowing everywhere, naturally. The beloved son of the kingdom, the beloved son of the king, the beloved son of the queen had died so early, prematurely, so it seemed. And Angira Muni in disguise, along with Narada Muni, came. And they stood amongst the lamenting citizens, king and queen. And Narada Muni and Angira, first Angira, began to speak. Text 1, this is in chapter 15. While King Chitraketu, overcome by lamentation, lay like a dead body at the side of the dead body of his son. Because this is what happens. When one loses those things that one is most attached to, one feels as if one has no reason to be alive. And one feels, practically speaking, like being dead. And one acts, one's life energy leaves the body. So the king lay like a dead body at the side of the dead body of his son. And the two great sages, Narada and Angira, instructed him about spiritual consciousness as follows. O King, what relationship does the dead body for which you lament have with you? And what relationship do you have with him? You may say that you are now related as father and son, but do you think this relationship existed before? Does it truly exist now? Will it continue in the future? There are 8 verses here where Angira speaks to the king and speaks on a spiritual level, which is just the last mood that this, or the last level that the king in his lamentation wishes to hear, but yet, due to the incredible spiritual potency of Angira and Narada, they were able to pierce the king's illusion by their powerful spiritual words. So we'll read these 8 verses, then read some of, and we'll read Prabhupada's purports. Does it truly exist now? Does your relationship exist? After all, if you are his father and he is your son, your relationship is based on the body. And when your body dies, when his body dies, or before his body existed, was the relationship in existence? O King, as small particles of sand sometimes come together and are sometimes separated due to the force of waves, the living entities who have accepted material bodies sometimes come together and are sometimes separated by the force of time. It is unavoidable. We come together in so many relationships, we become attached in those relationships, and suddenly, boom, blown apart by one thing or another. But what is that thing that actually changes our relationships? And there are so many we have in this world. What is the thing? It is time. The unstoppable force of time, which is a function, an energy of the Supersoul of Lord Krishna in his form as Paramatma. And yet, although everyone knows that all relationships in the material world are doomed to break apart, but yet we put all our attachment into them. And therefore we are setting ourselves up for great misery. When seeds are sown in the ground, they sometimes grow into plants and sometimes do not.
Why?
Sometimes the ground is not fertile and the sowing of seeds is unproductive. Similarly, sometimes a prospective father, being impelled by the potency of the Supreme Lord, can beget a child, but sometimes conception does not take place. Therefore, since these things are out of our control, therefore one should not lament over the artificial relationship of parenthood, which is ultimately controlled by the Supreme Lord. It's out of our control. O King, both you and us, your advisors, wives, and ministers, as well as everything moving and not moving throughout the entire cosmos at this time, are in a temporary situation. Everything is in flux. Before our birth, the situation did not exist, and after our death, it will exist no longer. Therefore, our situation now is temporary, although it is not false. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master and proprietor of everything, is certainly not interested in the temporary cosmic manifestation. Nonetheless, as a boy at the beach creates something in which he is not interested, the Lord, keeping everything under his control, causes creation, maintenance, and annihilation. He creates, how? By engaging a father to beget a son. He maintains by engaging a government or king to see the public's welfare. And he annihilates through agents for killing, such as snakes. The agents for creation, maintenance, and annihilation have no independent potency. But because of the spell of the illusory energy, one thinks himself the creator, maintainer, and annihilator. As from one seed another seed is generated, O King, so from one body, the body of the Father, through another body, the body of the Mother, a third body is generated, the body of a Son. As the elements of the material body are eternal, the living entity who appears through these material elements is also eternal. So without or through all these different changes, all this temporariness, all this creation, this coming together, this destruction, breaking apart, there are eternal factors in that. And this is actually why this type of preaching is given. In one of Srila Jiva Goswami's Sundarbhas, he explains that this type of preaching, that everything is temporary and that there is no meaning to anything in the material world, this is actually jnani preaching. This isn't actually the preaching of bhakti. Jnani preaching means that one sees the material world in its illusory factor only. Indeed, one even says, a jnani will see the material world as completely illusory, as false. But this is not bhakti. But yet, this type of preaching is required because we have more or less insane attachments to the material world. We have unreasonable, perhaps that's a better word for it, unreasonable attachments to the things of the material world. Unreasonable because they are doomed, they are temporary. And if we put all our energy, our affections, into the things of the material world, beginning with our affection for the body, oh, how will we suffer? So the jnanis, the impersonalists, using their intelligence, they break the attachments to the fleeting material world and remain, as a goal, completely renounced and lacking any attachments. But in devotional service, the purpose of the breaking of the attachments, and it can only happen truly simultaneously with developing the positive, the attachment, the relationship with the spiritual, with Krishna. with Vrindavan. Otherwise, we can hear until the cows come home about how the material world is temporary and the relationships are fleeting and they cause us so much pain. But because the living entity by nature wants something, it desires, it is the quality of the soul to grasp because it feels incomplete. Unless we grasp tightly to Krishna, our relationship with Him, we will be forced by the very nature of the desiring soul, because it has consciousness, we have consciousness, we need to grasp. We can't help but grasp. We'll be forced by that tendency to grasp onto matter. Practically speaking, actually speaking. So although this type of preaching is not false, it is not fully the Vaishnava preaching. The Vaishnava preaching is be neutral in regard to the material world. See the material world as Krishna's energy. And therefore, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Shiksha Kameka Purusha Paranasi Krishna Chaitanya Sarira Dari Vipambudiryas Tamaham Prapadye Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach this Vairagya Vidya. Detachment, but with knowledge of our relationship with Krishna and also of this material world's relationship with Krishna. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya Uchite is meant to be used in Krishna's service. So this type of preaching is shaking us because we're unreasonably attached to matter. But yet, it is not sufficient to become detached from matter. What we need also, and to complete the detachment from matter, is to become very, very, very attached to Krishna. So, 7 and 8. As from one seed another seed is generated, O King, so from one body, the body of the father, another body, the body of the mother, a third body is generated, the body of a son. As the elements of the material body are eternal, the living entity who appears through these material elements is also eternal. So that is what we want to grasp and focus upon, the eternal. If we focus our consciousness on the temporary, we are being very unreasonable and we are setting ourselves up for so much misery. But if we can place our consciousness on the eternal soul and the eternal soul's eternal relationship with Krishna, and if we can awaken that relationship, then we too will become eternal. Divisions of generalizations and specifications, such as nationality and individuality. So here we are, when we think of ourselves in a general way, we think of ourselves as members of a community or a nation or some group or another group. And if we think of ourselves in a specific way, we think of our own personal individual characteristics, our individual characteristics. But these, when relating to the body, are the imaginations of persons who are not advanced in knowledge. If I think of myself as an individual, I think of myself as having these marks on my hand and this shaped fingers and these kind of ears and this kind of a head and an ankle that aches. But these are all, on the individual level, just fleeting. And they are imagination because they are based on the body, whom I am not. So this type of generalizations and specifications are the imaginations of persons who are not advanced in knowledge. So Chitraketu Maharaj, when he hears this, he replies. But before we hear that, we'll hear some of Prabhupada's explanations of these verses. The first thing that Angira Muni said was, O King, Sitriketu Maharaj, you are sitting and crying, you are lying on the ground, lamenting over the death of your son. But actually you're lamenting over the body. So he says, what relationship does the dead body for which you lament have with you? You're lamenting, but the body is right there in front of you. So what are you lamenting about? Well, everyone knows what's being lamented about. That which is lovable within the body has gone. The body is still there, and yet the king is crying and crying and crying for his son. But if his relationship is with the body, why is he crying? The body's still there. But that which is lovable, which gives lovableness to the body, is the soul. So what relationship do you have with him, the body? You may say that you are now related as father and son, but do you think this relationship existed before? Does it truly exist now? Will it continue in the future? Prabhupada's short purport to this verse. The instructions given by Narada and Angira Muni are the true spiritual instructions for the illusion conditioned soul. The first illusion, basic intoxication of material life, is that who am I? I am this, the body. If I am my body, well, then which body am I? Am I the body that I had when I was 4 years old? Am I the body I had when I was 7? Maybe we can put this down now. Am I the body that I had when I was 15? Am I the body I had when I was 25? Am I the body I had when I was 45? Am I the body that I have when I'm 54? But which body am I? I always thought they were me. I looked in the mirror and I thought, oh, that's me. So this is the basic illusion, the basic intoxication, the identification with the body. This world is temporary, but because of our previous karma, we come here and accept bodies, creating temporary relationships in terms of society, friendship, love, nationality, and community, which are all finished at death. These temporary relationships did not exist in the past, nor will they exist in the future. Therefore, at the present moment, the so-called relationships are illusions. They are there, they are real, but they're not really real. Because it's changed already. The body has changed. My mind has changed. But something doesn't change. So the relationships based on the body, they are doomed to change. Either today, tomorrow, in 1 month, 1 year, 10 years, 100 years, they will change. They must change. So they are called illusory because we act as if they are eternal. And that truly is what we long for. The second verse. O King, or the second verse in this segment, as small particles of sand sometimes come together and are sometimes separated due to the force of the waves, the living entities who have accepted material bodies sometimes come together and are sometimes separated by force of time. So these relationships come and go. King, it was here for a few years. Now, by the force of time, it is gone. Here's Prabhupada's purport. And no one can stop this time, this time, from crushing everything within the material world. We may like it, we may not like it, it doesn't make any difference. It's irrevocable, it's unstoppable. This is the material world. Purport by Prabhupada. The misunderstanding of the conditioned soul is the bodily conception of life. meaning who am I? I am the body. The body is material, but within the body is the soul. This is spiritual understanding. Unfortunately, one who is in ignorance, under the spell of material illusion, accepts the body to be the self. He cannot understand that the body is matter. Like small particles of sand, bodies come together and are separated by the force of time. And people falsely lament for unification and separation. Unless one knows this, there is no question of happiness. Unless one has these illusions broken, there is no question of adopting deep spiritual realization or entering into deep spiritual realization. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 2.13, this is the first instruction given by the Lord. Tehenosmin yata dehe komaram jovanam jara tata dehantara praptir diras tatra namuyate. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. He doesn't identify, the self-realized soul does not identify with the body or the changes of the body. We are not the body. We are spiritual beings trapped in the body. We are eternal. Our real interest lies in understanding this simple fact. Then we can make further spiritual progress. Otherwise, if we remain in the bodily conception of life, our miserable material existence will continue forever. Miserable material existence. That isn't politically correct. People don't like to think of material existence as inherently miserable. They think, yes, maybe there are obstacles to my happiness right now, but if I could just make this adjustment, push this out of the way, grab this. And everyone has their different concepts, objects of what they think is bad and good in their lives. That's illusion. Because material existence, the very nature of material existence for the eternal soul is miserable, because he longs for eternal relationships. And in the material world, every relationship is temporary. And we long, we buy our houses because we want the security of something that's truly ours. But is it truly ours? Will we not die and have to leave the house? Will we get kicked out by time in the form of death? So is this negative? Or is this positive? Is it cynical? Or is it hopeful? The Prophet explains that spiritual life is based on understanding this simple fact. So to get to the eternal truths, these temporary illusions have to be cracked. Then we can make further spiritual progress. Otherwise, if we remain in the bodily conception of life, our miserable material existence will continue forever. Political adjustments, social welfare work, medical assistance, and shopping. Probably doesn't mention that, but I do. And the other programs we have manufactured for peace and happiness will never endure. We shall have to undergo the sufferings of material life one after another. Therefore, material life is said to be dukkalayam shashvatam. It is a reservoir of miserable conditions. Next verse was 4. When seeds are sown on the ground. So the point is being developed that these things are not, our relationships are not in our control. Sometimes when seeds are put in the ground, they come up. Sometimes they don't come up. Is that in the control of the person who is broadcasting the seeds? No. Sometimes a father, another example, tries to beget a child, and sometimes conception takes place and sometimes it doesn't. So is it the coming together of the seeds in the earth, the male and the female, that actually create? No. They are not the ultimate word. They are perhaps required. The seed has to be there and the earth has to be there. They are necessary but not sufficient. What is ultimately the cause, the ultimate cause, is Sarvakarana Karanam. It is Krishna, it is the Lord. So everything is ultimately controlled by the Supreme Lord. Here is Prabhupada's purport. Marichitraketu was actually not destined to get a son. Therefore, though he married hundreds and thousands of wives, all of them proved barren and could not beget even one child. When Angira Rishi came to see the king requested the great sage to enable him to have at least one son. Because of the blessings of Angira Rishi, a child was sent by the grace of Maya, illusion, but the child was not to live for long. Therefore, in the beginning, Angira Rishi told the king that he would beget a child who would cause jubilation and lamentation. King Chitraketu is not destined to get a son by providence or the will of the Supreme. Just as a sterile grain cannot produce more grain, a sterile person, by the will of the Supreme Lord, cannot beget a child. Sometimes a child is born even to an impotent father and a sterile mother. And sometimes a potent father and fertile mother are childless. Indeed, sometimes a child is born despite contraceptive methods, and therefore the parents kill the child in the womb. In the present age, killing children in the womb has become a common practice. Why? When contraceptive methods are taken, why don't they act? Why is a child sometimes produced so that the father and mother have to kill it in the womb? We must conclude that our arrangement of so-called scientific knowledge cannot determine what will take place. What is enacted actually depends on the supreme will. It is by the supreme will that we are situated in certain conditions in terms of family, community, and personality. These are all arrangements of the Supreme Lord according to our desires under the spell of Maya, illusion. In devotional life, therefore, one should not desire anything since everything depends on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anya vilasita sunyam gyanakamara navritam anukulena krishnana shilanam bhakti uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruit of activity or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. One should act only to develop Krishna consciousness. One should place his consciousness on the eternal, on his relationship with Krishna. For everything else, one should fully depend on the Supreme Person. We should not create plans that would ultimately make us frustrated. Very heavy purports. Although on a very simple level, philosophical level, they are very heavy on a very basic level, on the level on which we generally live on, the level of illusion. But yet, although we tend to be in that illusion, we're like a weight that's thrown in the air, it seems like this sometimes. We can be in the air going upward for a while, but we tend to fall back to the level of illusion again. But yet, that illusion of being in materialistic consciousness, identification with the body, putting our hopes in matter, not thinking of eternality, our relationship with Krishna, of God. That really must be cracked, or we're going to become very frustrated, as Prabhupada said. So this is some reality therapy. So the next verse continues. And Angira Muni is saying that everyone Everyone is moving and is in a temporary situation. So it's very inherently frustrating for us because our situations are all temporary. So when we're in a bad situation, we're happy that it's temporary, but we're always pushing to try to find a good situation. And when we're in that good situation, which comes about by the changing of the planets or our karma, then we want it to stay. We wanted it to become fixed, our happiness, but it never does. In fact, in one day even, our mind fluctuates between happiness, anxiety, misery, up and down, peaceful, ignorant, up and down, up and down, in one day even. And that's what happens day after day in our life, in our situations as well. So these situations, Angira Muni explains, they are temporary. They're not false. They're not illusion. They're there. But the fault is when we consider them reality, when in fact they are shifting continuously. Not false. Not illusion. But temporary. Prabhupada's purport. The Mayavadi philosophers say Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. Brahman, the living being, is factual, but his present bodily situation is false. According to the Vaishnava philosophy, however, the present situation is not false, but temporary. It is like a dream. A dream does not exist before one falls asleep, nor does it continue after one is awakens. The period for dreaming exists only between these two, and therefore it is false in the sense that it is impermanent. Similarly, the entire material creation, including our own creation and those of others, is impermanent. We do not lament for the situation in a dream before the dream takes place or after it is over. Sometimes we actually do. I know when I have a really good dream, I try to keep it in my mind for as long as possible after I'm awake. But I can't. It's only a dream. So similarly, we try to keep our favorable, pleasant material situations, but we can't. They're illusory, like a dream. During the dream or a dream-like situation, one should not accept it as factual and lament about it. This is real knowledge. And it's such a relief. Sometimes we have a bad dream and we do something improper or someone does something to us that's painful. And we wake up and we're in a bad mood because of the dream. And we're living half in between. There's a period sometimes where we're living half between the dream and half awake. And then when we suddenly start realizing, hey, wait a second, that was just a dream. It's not true. The misery, the bad thing that happened that I'm trying to work out still, it's gone already. I'm awake now. It had no substance. It was insubstantial. It was false illusion, dream. What a relief it is. But sometimes it's so hard to give it up, even the bad parts. So it's like that in material life. But we really do need to wake up to our real eternal situation and relationship with Krishna. Then the next verse. So moving on, there's a philosophical progression here that everything is illusion, it's temporary, and it's not in our control if we have material consciousness. Next, Angira Muni explains. The Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, He's not interested in this illusion. This is reality. Like a child, an example. A boy on the beach creates something in which he is not interested. The Lord keeps everything under His control, causes creation, maintenance, and annihilation. Everything is under His control, but His real interest is not in the material world. And how does He create and control everything? Through other entities. He creates His potency is that which creates through a father, through a king he maintains, or a government he may maintain the citizens, and through destructive forces and wars. It is he, through his potency, is empowered. These entities and these events are empowered to destroy. Because as soon as that potency is withdrawn, no one can create, no one can maintain, and no one can destroy. So it's him, and yet he has no interest. So this is a very sensitive point, actually, that the Supreme Lord has made a situation in which we're suffering. This is how it can be viewed. And yet he has no interest in it. Here's Prabhupada's purport. No one can act independently, create, maintain, or annihilate. Bhagavad Gita therefore says, Prakriti kriyamanani gunaikamani sarvasha ahankara vamudatma. Ahankara, bewildered by false ego. Vamudatma, bewildered. Kartaham, I am the one who's doing it. Iti manyate, a person bewildered by false ego thinks like that. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities. I am the one who's doing it. But they're in actuality carried out by nature. Prakriti, material nature, as directed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, induces all living entities to create, maintain, or annihilate according to the modes of nature, the forces that actually control the material world. But the living entity, without knowledge of the Supreme Person and his agent, the material nature, thinks that he is the doer. In fact, he is not at all the doer. As an agent of the Supreme Doer, the Supreme Lord, one should abide by the Lord's orders. So this material world is not purposeless. It is set up by the Lord with a specific purpose. And he's not interested in the material world per se, in the creations of the material world. Like I once saw a bumper sticker that had, when I was in the United States, it was for some evangelical church that they wanted everyone to go to. So the bumper sticker said, God wants you to be successful, and the S of successful had a dollar sign through it, as if that's what God was interested in. He had a great interest in making sure that people who went to his church made a good income like that. But no, his interest is not childlike like that. Interest in the temporary things that he's condemning our interest in. No, he's interested in our using the temporary material situation as a field to realize the eternal, tadapa dhruvam artadam, through this temporary situation, we can actually gain the most greatest gain, an eternal benefit. That's what he's interested in. He's not interested in the creation per se, in and of itself, but he's interested in it as a field, an opportunity, a chance for us to progress spiritually. So it's the purpose, the progression of the souls within the material world that he's very interested in. Prakriti, material nature, as directed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, induces all living entities to create, maintain, or annihilate according to the modes of nature. But the living entities, without knowledge of the Supreme Person and his agent, the material nature, thinks that he is the doer. In fact, he is not at all the doer. As an agent of the Supreme Doer, he's empowered. All of us have power that can be withdrawn by God. We have an opportunity to use the energy, the power. Power means energy. The energies that we have, if we use it thinking it's me and my power that's doing everything, we're an illusion. In 1 second, it can all be withdrawn from us and we can do nothing. So what to do with that energy that's not actually in our control? We can use it and try to enjoy as much as we can, but we'll see. And we've already seen, practically speaking, even though we're diehard believers in our own ability to somehow or another make adjustments so we can really squeeze some pleasure out of this temporary situation. Or we can use it in that way, or we can use it in the service of the Lord with great, great loving devotion. So therefore, as an agent, since the power is provided by the Supreme Doer, the Supreme Lord, one should abide by the Lord's orders. The present chaotic conditions of the world, are due to the ignorance of leaders who forget that they have been appointed to act by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because they have been appointed by the Lord, their duty is to consult the Lord and act accordingly. The book for consultation is Bhagavad Gita, in which the Supreme Lord gives directions. Therefore, those who are engaged in creation, maintenance, and annihilation should consult the Supreme Lord, and everyone, practically speaking, on a teeny level or a big level, is engaged in all three. We create, we maintain, and we destroy. So therefore, some people do that on a little level, some people do it on a bigger level. And everyone, regardless of whether we're little or big, is simply doing it based on the power of the Lord. So therefore, we're all meant to consult the Lord in the form of the Bhagavad Gita, His instruction book, His direction book. Therefore, those who are engaged in creation, maintenance, and annihilation should consult the Supreme Person who has appointed them and should act accordingly. Then everyone will be satisfied and there will be no disturbances. And the next verse, sage gives the example of the mother's body, the father's body, and the child's body. But yet, although the bodies may change, there is something eternal. The elements are eternal. There's always the earth, the water, the fire, or whatever that makes up the bodies. So similarly, within the temporary material bodies, there is something also that's eternal. The soul, the living entity, the person that gives life to the body. As soon as the soul leaves the body, in 1 second, it's completely changed. It's like a piece of wood or something. It immediately starts decomposing. The life was given by the soul. Prabhupada's purport. From Bhagavad Gita, we understand that there are two energies, namely the superior energy and the inferior energy. And you can imagine, Chitraketu is hearing this. There he is. He's lamenting for his son. He's given his heart, his hopes, his dreams. His son is going to inherit the kingdom. He's going to perform ceremonies that will stop him from suffering the reactions to the bad deeds he's performed. His hopes are on the son, his love. And his son has died, and these sages have come and are telling him, this is all these deep emotions that you're experiencing, they're all false, they're illusion. They're based on illusion, they're based on ignorance. You're identifying with the body. You're thinking that the temporary is eternal. You're an illusion. Wake up. So Chitraketu is listening to this. State of shock. From Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada explains in his purport to text 7, we understand there are two energies, namely the superior energy and inferior energy. Inferior energy consists of the 5 gross and 3 subtle elements. These are obviously the gross elements and the subtle mind, intelligence, and false ego. Bhina prakritam astida. The living entity who represents the superior energy appears in different types of bodies through these elements by the manipulation or supervision of the material energy. Actually, both the material and spiritual energies, matter and spirit, exist eternally as potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The potent entity is the Supreme Person, and we are all His energies. Since the spiritual energy, the living being who is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, desires to enjoy this material world, ourselves, The Lord gives him a chance to accept different types of material bodies and enjoy or suffer in different material conditions. Factually, the spiritual energy, the living entity who desires to enjoy material things, is manipulated by the Supreme Lord. The so-called father and mother have nothing to do with the living entity. As a result of his own choice and karma, the living being takes different bodies through the agency of so-called fathers and mothers. So hearing this, and the final verse was in this section was about the generalizations and specifications of someone in illusion, all based on the body. And Prabhupada explains, actually there are two energies, material and spiritual. Both of them are ever existing because they're emanations from the eternal truth, the Supreme Lord. Because the individual soul, the individual living entity has desired to act in forgetfulness of his original identity since time immemorial, he is accepting different positions in material bodies and being designated according to many divisions of nationality, community, society, species, and so on. So this is very, very, very basic philosophy, the most basic foundational principles of spiritual life, that we are eternal. And yet we're identifying with the body in illusion, and everything born out of that. So Chitraketu has just heard this. Thus enlightened, he accepts these instructions, although he cannot act on this platform yet, but he accepts that these instructions. Thus enlightened by the instructions of Narada and Angira, King Chitraketu became hopeful with knowledge. Wiping his shriveled face with his hand, the king began to speak. And we'll hear his words, if Krishna allows, on Wednesday. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? This cracks the whole foundation of material life. The illusions of material life. Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.